to The Jay Kim Show, Hong Kong's first dedicated podcast on investing in Asia. Join us as we survey the land and discover the greatest companies and most profitable investment opportunities in Asia. If this is your first time listening, thank you for stopping by. This podcast is produced every week with the goal of providing actionable insights to you, the listener, with every single episode. And now, on to the show.
This week's show guest is Federico Est, blockchain entrepreneur, graduate of Singularity University, and founder of an exciting new company called Kleros. Kleros is an arbitration platform for the decentralized age. It's a unique solution for resolving disputes via blockchain and crowdsourced specialists, while ensuring integrity and transparency of rulings. Kleros aims to democratize access to justice in emerging economies and other topics on blockchain and governance. Federico walks us through this interesting and unique application in the blockchain space and how his team at Kleros aims to disrupt arbitration. Hi, Federico. How are you doing? Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for having me.
I'm pretty excited to have you on. You have a very unique and exciting background and a very interesting project that you're working on in a space that is extremely, extremely popular and well sought after right now. So I'm not a blockchain or crypto expert by any means. So I'm 100% on board with learning as well. And I think my audience shares the same sentiment. So for the audience listening in, perhaps you could give us a general introduction of yourself and your background.
Sure, Jay. So my name is Federico Ast. I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I studied economics at the university. Then I studied philosophy. When I was a teenager, I always wanted to be a writer. So when I finished university, I went to work in a newspaper, in the most important newspaper in Argentina, and also one of the most important in Latin America. So and I started working there in the online media sections. Mm-hmm. I was very young and there was a project there, I would call it like a fast company in Spanish, like an online website for business and entrepreneurs, and worked there. And then I was there for a couple of years and very connected to innovation. And that's what took me to blockchain, right? It was, I think, the early 2010s. And some people were starting to think about blockchain and Bitcoin and what's this weird internet currency. And that's how mm-hmm. I got connected to that. And I also was very interested in governance because being from a country like Argentina, which has had lots of problems in governance, you know, bad government, failed governance, and very serious currency crisis. No, Argentina is one of the few countries in the world that managed to have a $1 million inflation rates back in the 1980s. So that made people here very aware of the problems that bad currency can happen, right? Can create in a society. So this connection between governance, currency crisis, made me become very interested in blockchain, right? And then I got tired of working in the media and went back to school to do a PhD. And I studied collective intelligence and I studied how people make decisions together. And from all those experiences I had in life, I guess that's what took me to what I am doing now, that is applying blockchain technology to improve governance, in my case in particular, in justice systems.
That's fascinating. And I know that you are also a graduate of Singularity University. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So I started working on my project on the use of blockchain for governance. And so I published a paper back in 2015, I think. A paper that basically what it said, it's like, so we have justice systems that are built with very old technology, like technology from the 18th century, like when people went to, they used horses and they wrote letters to each other. And now we have the internet. And so what we have known as courts are not really working anymore, right? I wrote a paper like just to propose how should justice work in if we had to build it with the tools we have today and with the things we know today. I published that online. And so people started to call me. So people from MIT, from Princeton, so scholars telling, hey, this is very interesting. And I was invited to a conference in Amsterdam to talk about this, right? In a panel of blockchain and governance. And there I met a professor of Singularity.
I see.
And he told me, hey, man, this is very interesting what we're working on. And the world needs people working on exponential governance. Mm-hmm. Why don't you apply to Singularity, right? So I knew Singularity, but I thought it was very far from me. What is Singularity going to do with this little man from Buenos Aires, right? But he said, you should apply. And then I applied. And I guess they were, they were drunk in the admissions committee because I got in. So I went there in 2016. I spent there 6 months, living and studying and, collaborating with other 79 people from 40 countries. Some of them, the most amazing people I met in my life. Some of them doing biotechnology, robotics, VR, AI, whatever. And I got the chance to talk about my project and about what I wanted to change in the world to the world's brightest minds, I guess.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, Singularity University is literally some of the smartest people in the world, and there's a metric they use. You have to solve a problem that's a tenth to the something degree that you have to be able to solve a problem to that magnitude. It's just fascinating because I've met a handful of people that have come out of that program, and they're just the thinking is on a different level. So I think it's fascinating, and I'm sure you've enjoyed the experience. It's interesting to me, Federico, because as someone who doesn't have really a legal background, more of a media publishing background, for you to tackle or go into this sort of field specifically around blockchain. So I think, a lot of people, if you were, I'll take myself for example, I'm an investor, but I'm not necessarily in the blockchain space. But because I was an early stage investor, I also heard about Bitcoin and this sort of thing back in 2010-ish. But it was more of a very tech geeky type thing. I would go to conferences and people would be talking about it. Tech geeks would be talking about Bitcoin and how it's going to change the world, but it never really moved the needle outside of that small contained ecosystem. So for you to actually pursue something in this, was there a moment, a sort of light bulb moment when you were put, blockchain and governance together and you were aha, this is what I have to pursue?
Look, I was interested in changing governance. So I was not trying to do a Bitcoin or blockchain startup. So something they always tell you at Singularity is, so fall in love with the problem, not with the solution. So I started to think about these topics before anyone was thinking about blockchain and governance. So Ethereum was very, very early stage. And nobody really knew that, how it would work, if it would work. So I just was in love with the problem. And then it just happened that blockchain was the solution to this problem. If the solution to this problem would have been AI or VR or whatever, maybe I would be doing a different technology. But so it turned out to be that blockchain gives us the technology that we need to tackle this big problem we have now. And that's why I became interested in this technology. And the fact that I don't have a legal background, I guess this could be more an advantage than a disadvantage. Because if you see the people who in history have disrupted all industries or all institutions, they usually didn't come from that same industry, right? If you see who disrupted, libraries, it was not a master librarian doing librarianship better than existing librarians. So it was Google It was software engineering. If you see like the guy from Uber, he was not an expert in transportation. He was a software guy, right? And then the same with Airbnb. And, you know, as Mark Andreessen says, software is eating the world. It's also about something that Elon Musk says. So think about the first principles. In the end, what's a court system, right? It's a number of guys trying to find the truth about some facts that happened or did not happen in the world, and if someone broke or didn't break an agreement. So it's more about like finding the truth about a dispute, and you don't need to be a lawyer for that, I guess.
That's very true. That's a great point, Federico, because oftentimes it is people that are outside of sort of the niche or the space that gives you that sort of variant perspective in. And you can actually see, you know, a lot of times when you're too neck deep into the industry or just, you know, deep in the thick of it, then you don't see sometimes what can be very obvious to outsiders on things like disrupting an entire industry. So, okay, so let's get right into it. This is quite interesting, and I'm excited to dive in. So let's talk about Kleros and what exactly you're trying to do there. You know, what does where did you come up with that name, and what exactly is the broad strokes, you know, sort of elevator pitch type of idea? And let's start there, and then we'll drill down from there.
Good. So, to understand this, so let me take you back to ancient Athens in the 5th century before Christ. You know, the Greek had a different concept of justice that we have now. They did not have lawyers or judges, but they had the idea that ordinary citizens have a right to judge in a trial. So on trial days, every citizen who wanted to be a jury, he went to the court with his ID. It was a bronze plaque called Pinakion. It was a small bronze plaque with the name on it. And then he put the plaque into a big stone block with many slots called Kleroterion. So that's where the names come from. So Kleros is chance, and Terion, it means something like altar. So Kleroterion is the altar of chance. So when you put the ID there, and so then comes an official from the justice system and throws some white and black balls on a tube affixed on a side of the stone block of the Kleroterion. And if you have on your row a white ball, then you are going to be a juror. If you have a black ball, so you're going to home and you're dismissed. So that's what the Greek invented in order to have juries selected in a fair way and in a transparent way, so no one could tamper with the jury selection process. So let's take this to our days, right? This idea of using of the fact that people, ordinary people, could be a judge in a dispute. Let's think about, I am in Argentina, so I want to hire some developer in Guatemala, for example, to do a website for me. And this guy, so we do an agreement, and I pay him, and he does the website, and I don't like it. I'm not going to Guatemala like to sue him for like $500 or $1,000, right, website. Imagine if I could, instead of paying him directly, I had put the money into a smart contract. If everything goes right, so the money is transferred, everybody's happy. But if there is a dispute, the money stays locked into the smart contract, and Kleros is going to select a juror of experts in website disputes, and these guys are going to analyze the evidence and vote who is right, and they are going to collect a fee for the work they did, right? So Kleros is this autonomous organization, completely decentralized, that is going to handle all this selection process based on the ideas that the Greek had long time ago, like selecting experts in the issue at hand for adjudicating the dispute, and not having like experts like lawyers and judges, professional lawyers and judges, but people from the community should have the right to decide. So that's the main idea, right. And this is a very simple case, but Kleros can be used in lots and lots of different use cases. We can use this in insurance. You can use this in government, for example, in transit tickets. You can use this in all kinds of e-commerce disputes. many different small claims. Kleros can have the possibility of solving them much better than existing solutions.
That's very interesting. Thank you for the basic sort of introduction and the explanation, because it helps me understand exactly what you're after here. So just to recap, so it's ancient Greece, is that right? And how did you guys even find this original scenario where the people could come and they would use their Pinakian bronze plates and they get selected for basically a jury duty type scenario, right? How did you guys find this? Did you research it? Were you a historian or someone on your team thought of it?
Well, actually, remember that I am a philosophy major, so I have read about the Greek long ago. Of course, at that moment, when I read Aristotle and when he was writing about the Athenian constitution, I didn't pay too much attention to how the jurors were selected. But somehow, you know, when you start working your path and then you see in the past and then the dots start to connect, and I guess that's where the idea came from initially, of course. And then I did a lot of research. And of course, this it's not that Kleros works exactly as the Greek system worked, but it is quite heavily inspired in the main idea, in how the Greek system of justice worked. But yeah, I guess it comes from my university education a long time ago.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's fascinating how you can draw inspiration from that. Very cool. And so, okay, so let's walk through that simple example again, just so we have a live idea. The audience has a very good idea. So like you said, let's say myself, J. Kim, wants to have a website done. I want to get my website redone. And so I hire a web developer somewhere in another country, let's say, call it Indonesia, right? And because I like this person's, I don't know, I go to his website, I see his work, and I like his style. So I want him to revamp my website. So he does the thing, I make the payment. And then all of a sudden, I realize afterwards, when the project's complete, that he forgot to add a few things, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then so this is where the problem usually begins. And this is a small job, maybe, you know, $1,000, nothing big. Obviously, so immediately in my mind, what pops up, Federico, is right now there are sort of social proof based, ratings that a lot of companies are using, right? Like upvotes or user reviews for things like Uber and Airbnb. And that directly affects sort of, a sort of service provider or a consultant's ratings, which then you would expect that to negatively affect their revenue going forward or their business going forward, right? And so now you're saying that with your platform, with your solution, basically, you can then go to a third party who will then organize a group of jurors, so to speak, online or specialists to look into this case specifically. And then I guess the collective votes. And then when the decision comes down, then the jurors get compensated.
So that's correct. Yes. The Kleros, what it does is selects the right juror with the right skills for the specific type of dispute you need to solve, right? I didn't dig very much into how the jury selection process works, but this is where the magic happens. So, So in Kleros design, jurors are anonymous, right? So you don't have to, because if you need a juror who has experienced being a juror before, and you know his reputation, what happens? So you end up having a couple of jurors with very high reputation, and so maybe these guys are going to ask for a lot of money to solve dispute because they are most trustful, and
that's right.
Have the problem of lots of people who want to start being jurors, but they don't have any experience yet, right? So they don't have reputation points, and how can they start? Mm-hmm. It's like a very big entry barrier for them. So
that's right.
Is that if we can develop a system that can adjudicate the dispute and using jurors that don't have maybe this experience, this proven experience. So if you lower the cost, the barrier to entry to being a juror, then you have a much larger pool of jurors, right? In this website dispute about the guy from Indonesia, so maybe if you wanted to go to the proven jurors, then you have, like, I don't know, 100. If you develop a system that allows everyone having this expertise to be a juror into this kind of dispute, then you have 1 million potential jurors. And if you have 1 million potential jurors, you have lots of people to select. And so the supply of arbitration services is going to be so much higher that the cost of arbitrating a single dispute will go very, very low. And I think that this cost will go below some threshold, after which it becomes, for the first time, possible to arbitrate disputes that before you just had to write it off because you could not, like, arbitrate this dispute for the website with all technology. Because if you go to court in Indonesia for $1,000, it doesn't make too much business sense. But if the cost of adjudicating the dispute goes below, like, goes to $10 or $15 or $20 or who knows, then it makes sense, right, to do it. And then, that's when I guess when the world changes, because you think about the also about the how different industries are being reconfigured now. If with what we think about blockchain is going to be true, you know, we're going to have in the next 5 years maybe some e-commerce websites, but completely decentralized, a platform that's like an eBay without the eBay, Uber without the Uber, an Airbnb without the Airbnb. So all cooperatives owned by the users. These cooperatives are not going to have a customer support service because they just do the one thing, right? So Bitcoin does not have the chargeback system that credit cards have, right? So
right.
Each part of the ecosystem have to build one piece of the puzzle. So what I imagine as the future is like the Uber decentralized, Airbnb decentralized, and et cetera decentralized are going to outsource their dispute resolution to a player that is going to be very effective doing this. And I hope this is going to be Kleros, right?
Right. Very interesting. So now, going back to our example here, Federico, if you don't mind. So let's say, and I'm not sure if you guys are at this stage yet of development, but how do the, let's say in my dispute, now how would the jurors, so to speak, be selected? Can you just volunteer, kind of like bidding on a freelance gig at a site like Fiverr or Upwork or something like that? Or is it, are you selected, so to speak?
So it works like this. So actually you self-select into a court where you think you have expertise to solve the dispute. For example, imagine, so this guy from, I guess, Peru, he works in a website design company. And on during the night, so on his downtime, he may want to make some extra money by arbitrating disputes in Kleros, right? So he needs to have this token that is going to give him the possibility of being a juror in disputes. So I am this guy from Peru, and I have this token, and I activate the token into a court handling website disputes, right? So imagine like 3,000 other potential jurors deposit the token into this court. So then there is this random machine that's going to select maybe 7 jurors, right? Out of the 3,000. And so these 7 guys are going to have the right of arbitrating the dispute. And this means the right to analyze the evidence, vote on the outcome, and then collect an arbitration fee for their work, right? And so that's how jurors are incentivized to participate in the platform, because they actually make money by providing their expertise in solving disputes from other people. And so... how do you incentivize the people? Because here the biggest risk is like having the juror like voting randomly, whatever, just to collect the fee and leaving fast of the platform. So here is where the magic happens, because this is where we use game theory incentives in order to have jurors arbitrate the cases honestly. So, and this is based on a game theoretical principle called the Schelling point. It was invented by Thomas Schelling, a mathematician, and he was a Nobel Prize of Economics 2005. And so the thing he developed is a kind of game, like, you know, the prisoner's dilemma about the two yes. prisoners in the separator. It kinds of work like that. So imagine if you have seven juries voting on the same type of dispute, on the same dispute, and having the same set skill set. So we would expect these guys to have the same decision into this dispute, right? Because they are they have the same skills, they have the same evidence to analyze, and so we would expect them to vote in a similar way. So imagine you have six of them voting A is the winner, and one of them voted B is the winner. So what can you assume about the guy who voted B?
You can assume that he probably wasn't... If the standard equality standard is the same, then maybe he didn't put as much work into it to come up with his conclusion.
So that's correct. That's how the Schelling point works. So this guy, remember he had deposited a token in order to be drawn as juror, right? So mm-hmm. this guy... that we can assume that he did not do his job properly, is going to lose that token, and this token is going to be redistributed to the other six juries that voted in a coherent way. So since every juror is going to vote independently from the others, we expect them to vote for the truth, right? For the truth in this type of dispute, right? For what they think according to the skills that they have and the evidence they see is should be the winner in this dispute. So that's like the magic of the game theory, which comes from the economic discipline, right? It doesn't come from law, but it has an impact when you apply it to dispute resolution. And so I guess that is why we are not lawyers here, but we are trying to apply logics from other disciplines into solving disputes.
Right. Okay. And what is the sort of magic number of jurors working on one particular case? Is it seven? I mean, obviously it has to be an odd number.
Yeah. So that is a very big question. And we still don't have an answer, but that's a important research point that we have. Remember, we are mostly a science company. We are developing social technologies. And we actually have a guy of the team, William, who is in Toronto. He's a mathematician, and he's doing exactly this type of research, like figuring out what's the exact number of jurors that we want to have to solve disputes, because there are like two forces at odds here. Like, we want to have as a small number of jurors as possible, because that would lower costs. Mm-hmm. But if you have a low number of jurors, then it may be more difficult to figure out who is the guy who is voting differently, because if you have only like three jurors, so 2-1 result, so this guy who voted different from the others, is it really that he didn't take a look at the evidence, or is it really that the case was not very clear cut, so he still might be in a, yeah, he may be punished unfairly if we take his token. So if we have 25 jurors, and then you have like, I guess, 22 voting for one thing and three voting differently, so in this case, it's more clear that these three that right. vote differently. So what we are trying to understand is what's the optimal number of jurors at which we can have accurate verdict at the lowest possible cost. That's what we want to optimize.
That's interesting. And obviously, there could be variance between cases and sectors or specific cases of different industries and this sort of thing. I'm sure you guys will have to dig into that. I guess there would be variance in compensation as well. I mean, if it's something that is a pretty crystal clear and easy type case, like a website dispute, versus potentially something much, much more involved, like something on the corporate level or something much more complicated involving a much higher level of expertise, I guess the reward would be adjusted accordingly.
Yeah, of course. So this in the end is like two-sided marketplace. You know, on the one side, you have a demand of arbitration services. So this website dispute demand expertise in websites for adjudicating, right? But if you have disputes like about nanotechnology, whatever, so yeah, the amount of jurors that maybe are have the expertise to arbitrate this is going to be much lower, right? So the fee that you would have to pay for jurors to adjudicate the dispute would be higher. So at this moment, we are focusing mostly on very simple use cases, very simple disputes. As I told you, the website one. So another one could be insurance. So you have like two cars who have a car crash. Mm-hmm. And so who, company A against company B, so who was the who was guilty for this car crash, who has to pay. So you have a jury of people who understand transit regulation, and so seeing the evidence, they can like expert witness who was the who was guilty. So we are still at this point of very early technology, just going for use cases that have like two possible decisions, like A or B, and where there are no very gray areas, right? And because when you start to complicate, imagine like solving a complicated corporate law suit in Kleros. So here you may have more actors. You can have like there's not only two parties, but then maybe five parties, and so the evidence is not clear cut. So in principle, the technology should work for that, but this is like the early days of the internet, right? So yeah, just let us send an email for now, and then we will see if in the future we can start to stream video. But for now, we are starting to tackle very use cases that are simple. And you know why? Because lots of the problems so that people have in their everyday life, in their economic relationships, are simple as this one, right? Are if we can help this guy who builds websites, so that's great for a starter. And then we will start to focus on more complicated disputes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a much better understanding now, Federico, after just spending a few minutes, the last several minutes, walking through these scenarios with you. And you're doing a great job of explaining it to us, our audience, and as well. So thank you. I appreciate that. I think that it's kind of one of these things where it's on the small scale, I can understand it. And then on a large scale, I can see, oh, wow, I can see the huge potential that this could happen in all parts of life. But to get from here to there, well, I guess that's for you and your team to figure out. But
that's our job, yeah.
It just seems like way, way above my level of comprehension. But having said that, you did mention a little bit about your team member that was researching sort of what the optimal number of jurors are. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your team there at Kleros and how you pulled them together to work on this exciting project.
Yeah, sure. So Kleros was born like 1 year ago because we had three guys from different parts of the world that actually were working on similar stuff at the same time, but without knowing each other, right? I told you I was doing research and starting to, and became interested in the use of blockchain and the use of crowdsourcing in justice systems for a long time. So there was this guy called Clément and the other guy called Nicolas who were in France, in Paris, and they were doing the same type of research, and they presented at a hackathon some ideas mm-hmm. they had. Mm-hmm. And so one of the jurors of the hackathon actually knew me and knew what I was working on. So and she told Clément, hey, why don't you talk to Federico and why don't you like see if you can collaborate, right? So we talked, and so we were passionate about the same things. We had very complementary skills, and we started working together. And this collaboration that started like 1 year ago, now it's a team of 10 people. So and it's a very distributed team because I'm in Buenos Aires. Clément is French, but he's in Portugal. Nicolas, the other co-founder, is French, and he's in Paris. So we have a communications manager is in Peru. We have two developers in the US, one in Oregon, one in LA. We have the crypto economics researcher in Toronto. Wow. We have PR manager is in Germany. We have a design lead who is in what's this country? Slovenia. We have the community manager who is from Scotland, but he is in Serbia. I'm sure I'm forgetting about someone, but you know, that's how the team, like, it's distributed. It's
fully decentralized team.
Look, we walk the talk, you know. So, and you know, it's a very interesting new model for building companies, because I have not even met some of the person, some of the people in the team. And so next week we are going to Paris and we're going to have our first full team meeting. And so I guess some of them, I'm going to just meet them for the first time. But the thing is that it doesn't matter because it works. So if you That's go right. to our GitHub, you can see that, so it's working. There is a proof of concept that's already working. And we are already doing some very powerful partnerships with different companies. And, you know, when you have people motivated and you have, I guess, a clear vision of what do you want to build, so you can make it work. It doesn't matter where you are.
That's right. And I love the way that we're able to do that now because of the internet. And this, it's such a cool something that you can't even imagine, you know, maybe 15 years ago that you could literally build companies from all around the world, a team working on it together that some people you might have never met. But I tell you this much, Federico, and I know this firsthand because I'm, you know, I have several business partners I do projects around the world as well. And in many ways, we're much more efficient being in our own time zone. You know, there's no frivolous meetings, any of this sort of thing. You know, I mean, it's literally, we're just working, and we're on Slack and we're talking, and we do a few conference calls here and there, but mostly Slack chat and just working, grinding through it. So I think it's great. And it's just a sort of preview and precursor to what the world is becoming, which I love. So I want to let's move into our next my next sort of question, which you kind of alluded to when you were explaining the idea of Kleros, which is the Panakion, the bronze or brass plate or coin that the ancient to go in and submit to try to get this jury duty, so to speak. Let's talk about your latest project that you're working on with relation to Kleros and what you're trying to do there.
The jurors are going to be selected by use of the token. So we need to put the token in the hands of the people, of the users, for them to have it and so can deposit it for being selected as jurors. So we're planning to do a token sale around April, maybe probably the end of April. We're going to use a new method of token sale called interactive coin offering that was developed by Vitalik Buterin and Jason Teuch, that is one of the founder of Trubit, a very important blockchain company, because this method is more efficient for having more people being able to buy the token, right? Because you don't want to tokens becoming going only to the hands of the big whale companies, big whale investors. We have to remember at all times that token models have tokens for a reason, and this reason is because they play a important incentive role in the platform, right? So that's why we need to do a token distribution, and this is the way that we think it's going to be more efficient for our goals.
So can you explain quickly how it differs from your a traditional initial coin offering?
In the traditional coin offering, so you have you are the investor, so and you can either select how many tokens you want to have. So you can be diluted. You don't get to know how many what percentage of the platform you're going to own or the price you're going to pay, right? So in this new method, you can choose your own personal hard cap, and if so, you select a too low a lower hard cap at the end, the one that ends up being selected by the whole market, then you are kicked out of the token sale, right? So, but you have more certainty of what you are going to pay and for what a part of the token percentage you are going to pay that, right? So it's a new method that we are still analyzing exactly how it works. It has not been done at this moment by any company. And we think that it can solve many of the problems that token sales had in the past. So this is for the moment. It's only a paper by mm-hmm. Vitalik and Jason, but we think it can solve a bunch of problems of token sales, and we are willing to experiment with it because it can work very well.
So it's almost like a blind bidding type scenario where you put your maximum price, so to speak, and then if you're below the threshold or the average, then you're out. Is that the general concept?
Yeah, you can see it in that way. I guess it's much simpler to explain it in that way. So there are multiple rounds where you can come back and adjust your bidding. So, but the general idea is that one.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see if you guys actually end up going down that route. And in that scenario that you gave us, it's actually that utility token where if I'm someone of expertise that I want to join an arbitration panel, I would deposit this token into the system, so to speak, and then if I get selected, then I would arbitrate a case and get awarded, I guess you get your deposit back and you get awarded on top of that if you vote honestly, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So you, as a juror, you get two types of rewards. One reward, you get that in Ether because you just are paid arbitration fee. It doesn't matter how you vote, even if you vote like without even taking a look at the evidence, you will still be awarded that fee. Mm-hmm. But after, on top of that, you have this token system, right? If you vote differently from the others because you didn't take a look at the evidence or things we discussed before, so you are going to probably vote very in a different way from the others, right? Because you have like these other six guys who are experts in websites that did took a look at the evidence and probably will have the same decision, and you that are going to have a different decision. So you are going to be the only one who loses the token, right? And these guys are going to split the token, your token, among them. So these six guys are going to collect the arbitration fee. And on top of that, they're going to collect one seventh of your token that you lost. Yeah. So it's important for the platform to have the token because it's the only way to generate the right incentives for jurors to participate. If we didn't have the token, then we could have the problem of like jurors voting randomly anything. So it wouldn't work. So it's important that we have it for the incentives being right for voting.
And there will be a limited amount of tokens, I gather?
Yeah, correct. So it's going to be the exact number we are still figuring out because we're going to do it as simple as possible for jurors to use the token. So maybe instead of thinking about 0.00001 token, it's maybe to think about two tokens. But it's going to be like a fixed amount.
It's interesting because, man, this space has just exploded. And I think that there's such a disconnect between education and basically people that are, have jumped into the space for greed, basically trading some of these tokens and these ICOs. And a lot of these companies, I'm not an expert, like I said, and I haven't really followed it that much, but I've looked at some of these companies and they just there's a massive disconnect between the token that they're issuing and the underlying business. Like a lot of them, they don't even need a token, and I don't know why they're, it's just like a, I guess it's a money raising gimmick or something. So it's just strange to me that these people actually have these ICOs and they're able to raise millions of dollars and people jump in and jump out of them and they make money too and no one knows why. So it's refreshing. My point is it's refreshing, Federico, that you actually have a proper business that has a proper token that is useful on that platform. And I'm excited to see it live and work. So, as we look to wrap up here, Federico, and thanks again for your time. And it's been such an enlightening and engaging conversation we've had. I'm fascinated in Clairos, and I'm really gonna. I think my audience is gonna to keep track of the work that you guys do. And so, just a last few couple questions. You know, and I have to ask you, as someone that's in this sort of blockchain space, what do you think? You know, how do you see the next 12 to 18 months playing out in this? And I'm not talking like, oh, what's the price of Bitcoin going to be? Like, none of that. I'm more interested in what you think about the bigger picture landscape. You know, right now there just seems a lot of noise. It seems like there's a ton of things that are coming, you know, online. And I'm going to go back to that analogy that you said where you talked about the problem, not the solution, focusing on that. And I feel like a lot of people right now are trying to reverse engineer a problem based on this blockchain solution when it's not necessary. And so I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. How do you see this space evolving in the next 12 months?
I think that we have seen this picture before, right? This is not very different than the 1990s and the internet bubble. So suddenly we had this new technology called the internet that could connect to people everywhere and send data at a very low cost. And so people started to think, okay, this is a hammer we can use to for every nail, right? So you started to see companies like selling pet food on the internet and having a fleet of trucks everywhere, like pets.com and some other like very dumb business models, raising millions of venture capital money. And then went down and lots of them went bankrupt. But still, you still had some Googles, some Amazons, and some other companies that actually did change the world, right? I think that this moment of the industry that we are living now is not different from there. So you have this new technology, blockchain, so we saw that it can be used for making payments, but you know, that nobody really knows how it works and where it can be used. But so lots of people are just see the hype and they go and put money everywhere, and this drives valuations to crazy levels. Eventually, you know who is going to survive? The guys who are going to solve a real world problem of real world people using blockchain as a tool and not as an end in itself. Because that's how it always works in business. You know, you can scammy projects, I guess, can fake it for a while, but in the end, if there is no market for what they are doing, so it's not going to work. So I think in the coming maybe 12, 18 months, I guess we will start to see real use cases of blockchain technology, right? Mm-hmm. We know that it can be used for payments. So, but what about smart contracts, right? So, and where does this work? And this is, I guess, we are going to start to move into the slope of enlightenment in blockchain and start to see real use cases. And I hope one of these real use cases is going to be one of the Clairos is proposing.
I hope so too. I mean, I absolutely think that that this one is one that needs to survive, because I can see the clear use case for this and how it will vastly improve our world. So, you know, again, I think we're all looking forward to tracking your progress. Definitely, I'm going to keep my eye out on Clairos. I know you're in Hong Kong next month, actually. What sort of things do you have in the pipeline? And I think you're doing a little conference tour, going to be speaking at some things. What do you have on the pipeline?
So, yeah, I'm going to Hong Kong on the 19th of March until the 24th. And I'm going there for a conference called Token 2049. It's a blockchain conference, a very important, very good speakers. So I'm going to go there to speak there, and then also to have some meetings with blockchain communities there, so blockchain companies, maybe, and potential partners for us. So it will be my first time in Hong Kong, so I'm very excited about that.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to sitting down with you and spending some time. And are you going to be elsewhere in Asia while you're out here?
Yeah, so it's a roadshow that will go to Korea first, and then Hong Kong, and then Singapore, which also has a quite powerful blockchain community. So yeah, that's the Asia roadshow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, Federico, I'm going to make sure that all your links and stuff are linked up in our show notes here for the audience, so we can go back and reference some of the things that we talked about. But in the meantime, what's the best place that people can find you or follow you, learn a little bit more about Clairos, or maybe learn a bit about the offering that is coming up?
So you can visit our website at clairos.io, K-L-E-R-I-O-S.io. So that's our website. And then if you want, you can join our social media channels. You can come to our Slack, Telegram, etc. And so you can stay tuned with everything good that it's coming from us.
Fantastic. Federico, well, thank you again. It's been enlightening, an enlightening discussion, and I wish you the best of luck, and we're definitely going to follow your success in the future. So best of luck, and thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Jay, and I hope our Asian friends like the project and give us some support so we can all move forward this global movement.
Absolutely. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. All the show notes and links can be found over at jkimshow.com. Come back often and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Don't forget to join us next week for another exciting episode of The J. Kim Show. I'd love to hear your comments. You can find me on Twitter at jkimmer, J-A-Y-K-I-M-M-E-R. See you guys next week. This podcast is brought to you by Hack Your Fitness, the high achiever's guide to getting ripped in under 3 hours a week. If you're anything like me, you're probably working a full-time job or jobs and trying to find time to balance family life, social life, and last but not least, fitness. Look, I get it. I'm a full-time investor and entrepreneur myself, and father of two. So how am I able to stay fit year-round without spending hours and hours in the gym killing myself on the cardio machine? After struggling for the last 15 years trying every workout and diet under the sun, I finally designed a system that allows me to achieve and maintain single-digit body fat for life in under 3 hours a week, cardio not required. Head on over to hackyour.fitness and download my free 13-page guide that teaches you the simple science behind efficient fitness and smart nutrition and gives you everything you need to know to finally take control of your life. That's hackyour.fitness.